I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, President Donald Trump says he has labeled Antifa a terror group. So what happens now? Speaking of Antifa, the mayor of Portland, rather than deal with the fact that they have been rioting outside an ICE facility there for several months, blames ICE, saying he plans to shut that detention center down. And a former Tacoma police officer acquitted of manslaughter in the death of Manny Ellis speaks for the very first time.
I think the one question I kept asking myself is, what have I done in my life to end up here? So, you know, you think back on it and you're like, man, what did I do to end up here?
That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com, and we sure would appreciate the support. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Boy, we have a lot to get to, including an exclusive that we're just breaking on our social media platforms right now that I think is going to end up being quite a big deal. But speaking of big deals, President Donald Trump, I said on the show this week, I criticized him. I said he keeps talking about labeling Antifa a terror organization, yet he doesn't do it. I said, what is he waiting for? How many more people have to be assaulted? How many more businesses have to be vandalized? How many more cops have to be assaulted? How many more things have to be lit on fire? How many more people do they have to kill for them to realize that this is an organized terror group, no matter how much Democrats want to stick their heads in the sand and say Antifa is a figment of our imagination? So I like to think that President Donald Trump listens to our show and watches our show every day, because just a short time after I criticized him for not taking action, I'm kidding, of course, but I like to take responsibility for it. Nicole says, no, it's up. It's you. President Donald Trump put this out. I'm pleased to inform our many U.S. patriots that I am designated Antifa, a sick, dangerous, radical left disaster, as a major terror organization. I will also be strongly recommending that those funding Antifa be thoroughly investigated in accordance with the highest legal standards and practices. Thank you for your attention to this matter. No, thank you, President Trump. I will say, I think part of this is symbolic. I understand that. I think that we'll have a conversation about, okay, what happens from here? What does that really mean? You know, it's not like when he said that the drug cartel in Mexico is a terror group and then he's bombing them off the coast of the United States. I mean, you can't bomb Antifa, as much as sometimes I wish you could, in the United States of America, U.S. citizens, etc. So what does this actually look like? But I will say, I just felt this like wave of gratitude wash over me, because as you guys know, I've been public enemy number one, maybe not anymore, I would say I'm number two or three, but for a long time, public enemy number one of Antifa operatives in Washington State and in the West Coast. And, you know, I've been beaten by them. I've been mobbed by them. I've been harassed and threatened by them. I have feared for my safety in my own home because of them. And in every true sense of the word, they have terrorized me. They have terrorized this city. They have terrorized the citizens of Washington State, of Oregon, of California, and of many other places in the country. And they do it not just through their actions, but through their words. They want to silence anyone. I mean, they are the true fascists. They might as well be the Bolsheviks. They want to silence and, yes, kill anyone who disagrees with their ideology. And they want you to fear for your lives. That's what they're about. They are a terror organization in the truest sense of the word. You know, there's this video, as I've been, you know, frustrated over the failure of the Trump administration to do this more quickly. There's this video that, to me, is it the worst, most violent, horrible thing Antifa has ever done? No, but it sticks out to me, and I think about it all the time. It's kind of awful how often I think of this video, because maybe I need to seek some professional help. But you'll remember that Riley Gaines was making an appearance at the University of Washington to speak about radical gender ideology and protecting girls' sports. And I went to it, and there were some Antifa types who were outside the black-clad, black bloc, as they call themselves. And after the event was, as the event was wrapping up, police were so concerned about the people who'd gone in to see Riley Gaines that they were trying to, you know, it was basically a strategic exit. We want to get you out of here to your cars as safely as possible. And police officers were escorting some people. And there was this older couple that One of them was walking with a cane that walked out and was trying to walk to their vehicle that was just a short distance away. And the hate and the vitriol and the vile language being spewed at them by these Antifa members is something I will never forget.
Have you thought about killing yourself today? Have you thought about
the earth would be better without you?
Dry and nourish the flowers. If you have better use of fucking organic matter.
You'd actually be doing something if you're decomposing in the earth. Give back to the earth and kill yourself. Kill yourself, you old folks.
So are you gonna kill yourself tonight and be a good boy?
It would be so beautiful to see your bodies hanging from the trees, swinging back and forth.
Are you gonna be submissive and drop dead for me, babe?
Imagine if a rifle shot you in the head. You'd be so beautiful dead. Let's go around.
I bet your old ass blood is beautiful on the concrete.
How can anyone see that and not think that's terrorism? And look, I know some people might say free speech. I actually believed then, and I believe now, that they crossed that line, that those could have been considered actionable threats of violence. You know, they were very passive in their language and very strategic, but, you know, how beautiful would it be to see you swinging from a tree? You know, talking about what their old blood must look like. That's the scum of the earth. They are as despicable a humans as exist on this planet. They are terrorists. And the fact that the president of the United States and the federal government recognizes them as terrorists is deeply meaningful, even if just symbolic. You know, I believe that there's a place to do some sort of racketeering case, especially in the Pacific Northwest. We're still waiting for a new United States attorney for the Western District of Washington. I'm told that announcement is imminent. I hope it's a fighter. I hope it's someone who will go after these radical left-wing factions in a meaningful way, find out who is funding them, who is organizing them, and treat them as the terror organization that they are. And despite all the despicable things that they have done, you know, I'll say just really quick, after the show yesterday, you guys might recall that I was in a hurry. I had to go because I had somewhere to be. Well, I went to the local NPR affiliate. I was at KUOW yesterday for a couple hours, and they invited me in to talk about, it was a recorded interview. It's going to air in the next couple days, to talk about Charlie Kirk's assassination, but also about political violence. And look, I'm not dumb. I'm not naive. I kind of knew what I was going to be walking into. But I saw it as an opportunity to talk to an audience that needs to hear it about the violent left-wing extremism that we have been living under for the better part of 15 years. And I got an opportunity to do just that. But I will say it was this really shocking conversation for me. And the host, and I'll let the interview come out and I'll post it. I actually like the host quite a bit. She's been a friend of mine for years. We worked together in radio when I was just like 21, 22 years old. But we have different politics, very different politics. And there was really this effort, I felt, to diminish or rewrite history when it comes to left-wing activism and left-wing extremism. And I couldn't believe it. I was just stunned. You know, as if it was as if right-wing people are just as often out on the streets rioting and burning things and, you know, committing acts of violence. And I thought, gosh, I could rack my brain the last 10 years. I can think of two instances of right-wing extremism where they actually broke laws in pursuit of pushing a political agenda. And guess who called them out both times? I did, because I've been consistent on it. And so I guess just to hear these excuses and this cover for something that is as plain as day was shocking to me. But I got the opportunity to NPR's audience, and they'll hear it, and I'm sure they won't like it and they won't want to hear it, to speak the truth. But you see this denial. It's like they want you to believe 2 + 2 = 5. This denial, this rewriting of history, which is what totalitarian governments have done, is they want you to believe that what you're seeing and what you're hearing isn't actually happening and it's not as bad as you think it is. So you see this denial from the media, which has been part of the biggest problem. And you also have silence from politicians. And that's been my biggest issue with Bob Ferguson, is you said nothing. Well, while Seattle and cop cars were burning and looting and CHOP was happening in 2020, and then you're running for governor and all of a sudden you want to act like you care about political violence. It's just insane to me the extent to which they've been let off the hook for their silence on this issue. And then you have these progressive Democrats and Democratic socialists who do more than silence. They speak out and they, with their words and who they choose to condemn, they support Antifa. I don't know if I've had a clip from a politician that is this stupid. And that's a big high bar. So you guys will know, because we cover it on this show, because we're honest about what happens and we show you what's happening, so you actually know about it, unlike so many others in the media, that down in Portland, outside an ICE facility there, for months, there have been Antifa actions, including assaults of several journalists who we know, including assaults of ICE agents repeatedly. A member of Antifa who threw a machete at an ICE agent. There have been multiple arrests from the feds leading to serious federal charges for assault against ICE agents. They've been terrorizing that community. This ICE detention facility is in the middle of a neighborhood. You recall there's a black woman who went viral for coming and yelling at these stupid, dumb white kids who I'm sure believe in race and social justice. Not when it's a black woman living across the street in low-income housing who couldn't sleep for like 40 days because of the noise. And so they've been begging these residents, begging the city, please do something about this. The city has done nothing. Portland police have been non-existent when it comes to trying to disrupt this long Antifa occupation. Well, now we hear today from the mayor of Portland. Now we hear from Portland Mayor Keith Wilson, and he's talking about this ICE detention center. And I'm thinking, okay, great. Like, they're going to crack down. They're going to free this neighborhood in Portland from the terrorists, finally. Oh, no. You don't know West Coast progressives. Here's what he said.
Hello, I'm Keith Wilson, Portland's mayor. I'm here to share an important update about the Immigration and Customs Enforcement facility in Southwest Portland. Following a formal investigation into the facility's detention practices, the City of Portland will soon issue a notice of land use violation. Federal records show that ICE violated its land use conditions of approval 25 times in 10 months by detaining people for more than 12 hours or keeping them overnight. I'm here to thank our community for shining a light on these concerns and to thank our staff for conducting a thorough and thoughtful review. I want to be clear about what this means. This is just one step in a formal process. The outcome is not a foregone conclusion, and the federal government will be given an opportunity to respond. However, we must remember, this review was triggered by the federal government's breaking promises to our community regarding the detention of human beings. Whatever comes of this process, I hope you will join me in celebrating and supporting Portland's immigrant community and standing in solidarity with all those who've been impacted by the actions of the federal government in recent days. I owe a special thank you to city staff for doing this hard and important work with integrity. Thank you, Portlanders, for your outreach and your advocacy. I'm committed to keeping you updated as we move forward thoughtfully and transparently.
What do you even say to that? What do you even say to that? Not one word about the chaos and the violence and the destruction and the disruption of life for his residents. Not one harsh word for Antifa, for the left-wing extremists, for the terrorists. Oh, no, it's ICE's fault. It's ICE's fault for having a detention center in Portland. Ah, they ought to have expected this. And they're detaining people, and we don't like it. We don't like lawful immigration efforts. So we're going to try to get their land use permit taken away? I'm stunned. And people The left, they'll just like cheer that on. And again, you have this low-income housing unit. These Antifa goons have been stealing food from the food bank that's inside that apartment building to help the low-income people, many of them of color. I thought that the leftists, those are the people. Those are the people they stand up for. No, they don't care. And the Portland mayor made it very clear whose side he's on. The choice is federal immigration agents doing their jobs or terrorists. Federal police officers or terrorists. And the mayor of Portland came out and said, I side with the terrorists. Stunning. And in a sane world, that would be like, we got to recall him. But no, it's Portland. It's Portland. And they side with the terrorists too. Absolutely insane. Now, the story this was breaking before the show today. So if I didn't do a subscriber poll, which I didn't, I'm sorry, but we had to get this breaking news on because it's our final show of the week. And we got this tip yesterday. And I thought, gosh, this is one of those things where it sounds legit, but we've really got to look into it because it's that bad. I mean, I think we could be looking at a case of criminal prosecution, maybe from the federal government against a local elected official. So this is an exclusive that you're only going to hear about on Undivided. We broke the news on social media just before we came on the air today. So there is a King County councilwoman named Sarah Perry. King County is the county that Seattle's in, if you're not familiar. And she represents, I mean, the part of King County, like out of Seattle, so east of Seattle. There is a group called Indivisible Washington, and there's a larger Indivisible organization, which is like the left-wing grassroots activists for the Democratic Party. So there's a Facebook page called Indivisible Washington's 8th District, and the 8th Congressional District is like East King County, right? So someone in that page, which is a private group, but we have a sleuth on the inside who's a member of it, who sent us this post. PSA from King County Council member Sarah Perry. PSA alert. As of yesterday, there are at least 4 ICE agents staying at the Spring Hill Suites by Marriott in Issaquah. They are staying in the 2nd and 5th floor. The address is 1185 Northwest Maple Street. Please be alert and be supportive of our neighbors and community members and their kiddos. And I don't know if this second part is, you know, they're saying it's from Sarah Perry or if it's from the person sharing it. It goes on to say, ICE is here arresting people in our community who are not here illegally. They each get $1,000 per person that they pick up, regardless of circumstances. They have a monthly delivery quota and a $50,000 hiring bonus to join ICE to begin with. Please be alert. This is not okay. So the fundamental issue here, of course, is this person is saying that this PSA is from King County Council member Sarah Perry and lists the hotel, the address, and even the floor numbers of the hotel rooms that she claims ICE agents are staying at. That is insane, and I believe it's criminal. I actually believe it goes against Washington State's own doxing laws. And what does Councilwoman Sarah Perry hope that these activists do with that information? You know, it's one thing for them to say, hey, there's an ICE raid going on here, and that's been happening quite a bit. I disagree with it. I think it's dangerous for ICE agents. But if they're operating out in a public space, I don't think you can really hold people accountable for sharing that information because technically it's happening in public. People can see it with their own eyes. But you have a councilwoman, allegedly. It's not allegedly, I'll explain that in a moment, but at the time, allegedly, who is sharing the exact address, floor numbers of where federal agents, who she knows are under attack by activists, where they're staying and where they're sleeping at night. And that information gets shared to a left-wing activist group. Gee, what do you think is going to happen with that information? So last night, Nicole reaches out to the council member immediately. I thought, we got to try to confirm this. It sounds like true, but we got to try to confirm this. So we're going into the show today. She hasn't responded. And we aren't really sure, do we go with this? Do we not go with this? And then, you know, I got some information on background. I can't share it because it was given to me, actually, you know, it was given to me off the record. So I can't share the nature of it. But made me believe that this was true. So we decided we were going to go with the story today and say, this is the post. and we've given her 12 hours to offer a statement, and she hasn't, because oftentimes what you see elected leaders do is they just don't respond and think that that will kill the story. So we were going to go with it on the show, and then seconds before, I posted it on social media. Nicole finally got a response from Councilwoman Sarah Perry, admitting that, yes, in fact, she had done this. And she sent us a Facebook post that she posted just a couple minutes ago. She knew a story was coming. And she posted on her personal Facebook page, "Last night, I posted information regarding ICE presence in our community on my personal Facebook page. While I'm deeply concerned for the safety and rights of each of our impacted community members, I shouldn't have included specific and unsubstantiated information regarding their whereabouts. I removed the post and will continue to do what I can for the safety and well-being of our most vulnerable community members. Thank you for your care and concern as well." And it's almost like she's saying, like, well, I wasn't quite sure it was true, so that's why I took it down, you know? Unsubstantiated. I hope to God it was unsubstantiated. And I will say for myself, man, I pushed that out and I thought I should have blacked out the information on the hotel. But by the time I did it, it was too late. And I guess we're kind of, you know, and I was in touch with ICE and stuff, like, I shouldn't have done that, but I hope they're not there anymore. So, but it was out there already on this massive page. And so it's like, you can't really put the toothpaste back in the tube. But I will say, I kind of like, I wish I should have blacked it out, but then it was too late. So she ended up taking her post down, but it's too late. It was all over the Indivisible page. And if people opted to go to that hotel last night and try to find themselves some ICE agents, they were able to do that. You know, and I've been on social media, and this is something that the Department of Justice needs to know about. The Department of Homeland Security needs to know about. Again, it's one thing to say, here's where a raid is happening. It's another thing entirely for an elected official to say, here's where they're sleeping at night. Here's where they're sleeping at night. And she doesn't apologize in her post for doing it. She doesn't recognize the danger that that could have caused for ICE agents, because she doesn't care. And that's how radical these elected leaders are. That's how radical they are. They are willing to put the lives of ICE agents in danger. Down in Portland, they're willing to allow terrorists, and now we can actually call them terrorists, to take over part of their city. They're okay with it. They support it. So I think that this Sarah Perry thing is going to turn into a fairly significant story fairly quickly. And I would not be surprised if the federal government has something to say about it. So breaking now, but stay tuned. All right. I talked about free speech on the show earlier this week. I called for the resignation of Attorney General Pam Bondi. And I know a lot of you disagreed with that. That's okay. Love you anyway. But free speech is probably my top issue. And I don't think you can have a free country without free speech. That's why it's amendment number one. And she seems to just not understand how free speech works. If it was one slip of the tongue thing, I'd be like, ah, but it was two times in 1 week where she seemed to suggest that the federal government was going to criminalize speech around Charlie Kirk that it disagreed with. And to me, that's one time too many. And I just don't think you can have a chief law enforcer for our country who seems to either not understand the First Amendment or understands it and doesn't care and says stuff like that anyway. And it just gives fuel and ammunition to the other side when we're making the argument that I think is the valid argument, that the left is the side that has really been dangerous to free speech in this country. And there are so many examples I gave on the show about things happening local. Former Governor Jay Inslee tried to pass a law criminalizing wrong speak on elections. I was like, what, send you to jail for saying that an election was stolen? You had the federal government under Biden colluding with big tech to remove stories it didn't like about the president's son, et cetera, to remove wrong speak about COVID. No doubt the left has been the party that has been eroding free speech. And then they essentially shame you and scare you so much that people are scared to speak simple truths like a man is not a woman. You know, and so for that reason, maybe more than any other, I want Pam Bondi to resign, because I think that we have to be morally consistent when it comes to this issue, because if we lose our moral consistency, then free speech is just out the window. So we got to talk about what happened with Jimmy Kimmel. Now, my opinion on this is very nuanced. I don't know the extent of what actually happened behind the scenes, but Jimmy Kimmel over the weekend said something horrific about the Charlie Kirk assassination. And it wasn't even a joke. He didn't even deliver it like a joke. This was long after we knew, and after the governor of Utah and the federal government had said that the assassin of Charlie Kirk was radicalized in far left ideology. You know, we knew all of that. We knew what was on the bullet casings. And Jimmy Kimmel went on his show and said this.
We hit some new lows over the weekend with the MAGA gang desperately trying to characterize this kid who murdered Charlie Kirk as anything other than one of them and doing everything they can to score political points from it.
What's a joke about that? Like, isn't it supposed to be a comedy show? I'm all for comedy that's edgy. You know, I don't want to cancel comedians, but that's not even funny. And it's not true, of course. And he went on in that to play a clip of Donald Trump and suggest that Donald Trump wasn't even grieving for Charlie Kirk. So it was gross, right? It was disgusting what he said. And now Jimmy Kimmel has been pulled off the air. And we don't know if it's apparently indefinitely. His show, some people are saying it's canceled, but I think until they say it's canceled, I don't want to say that. He's been pulled off the air with no return date scheduled. And of course, everyone had their immediate theories about what happened, and the left immediately said this was the FCC forcing Disney's hand, and the right is saying it's something else. So let's go through it. So Brendan Carr is the FCC chairman, and he went on the news and he put out a statement, and they did say, look, people who have an FCC license, like ABC and Disney, in this case, they have obligations.
Yeah, broadcasters are different than any other form of communication, including here, we're on cable right now. Fox News doesn't have an FCC license, CNN doesn't, but ABC, CBS, NBC, those broadcast stations do. And with that license comes a unique obligation to operate in the public interest. And over the years, the FCC walked away from enforcing that public interest obligation. I don't think we're better off as a country for it. But look, President Trump ran directly at these legacy broadcast outlets, and he exposed them to these market forces. And a lot of these affiliate groups said, to your point, we're tired of carrying this stuff. Late night shows, something's gone seriously awry there. They went from going for applause, from laugh lines to applause lines. They went from being court jesters that would make fun of everybody in power to being court clerics and enforcing a very narrow political ideology. And Nexstar, as you noted, stood up and said, look, we have the license and we don't want to run this anymore. We don't think it serves the interests of our community. Sinclair did the same thing. So there's more work to go, but I'm very glad to see that America's broadcasters are standing up to serve the interests of their community. We don't just have this progressive foie gras coming out from New York and Hollywood.
Yeah, so the FCC is saying, look, there's obligations for an FCC license holder. And I remember very well a conversation I had with my general manager at Fox 13 one time. And she, and I don't think it was just to me. I think it was to a group. And she asked us what her number one job was. She said, what do you think my number one job is? And I'm like, I don't know, ratings, money, something. She said, it's to make sure that we keep our FCC license. She said, that is my number one job. And you can lose your FCC license. Now, I don't believe, for the record, I don't hold Jimmy Kimmel to the same standards of needing to spread truth as I would hold like ABC World News. Those are two separate things. Jimmy's show is supposed to be about like being a comedian, although, you know, it's not often very funny, but you know, you do you. So I don't believe that what he said, although wrong, would warrant the FCC threatening or suspending the license. But that isn't what happened here. And that's a very clear difference. The left wants you to believe that that's what happened. And they're spinning this tale that the Trump administration and President Trump basically picked up the phone to the FCC and the FCC picked up the phone and we're going to threaten mergers and all of these things and force their hand. But here's something, knowing what I know about how TV news works and its affiliates, that I know was the driver for it. If you have a show as a network, you rely on your affiliates around the country airing that program, whether it's Jimmy Kimmel or anything else. And that's how you sell ad spots. That's how you get revenue. So what happens if you have a show at the network that you produce and the TV stations around the country that control the licenses for their individual stations and channels won't air it? Well, then you don't have a show. You don't have a show without the affiliates. Because if no one's airing it, then no one's seeing it. And that seems to be what happened here. So Nexstar and Sinclair are some of the largest entities for television ownership in the country. And both of them own some ABC affiliates across the country. This is a common misnomer that if you're an ABC affiliate, so that's Como News in Seattle. For instance, when I worked for Fox 13, people thought we were owned by Fox. At the time when I worked for them, we weren't owned by Fox News. We were owned by a different company. So we were an affiliate. We weren't an owned and operated. So all the major networks, and I just want to make sure I get into the nerd of this because it's important you guys have this information. So CBS, ABC, the CBS, ABC, NBC, Fox, they have O&Os, which are owned and operated, where they directly own that station. Now, Fox 13 in Seattle is now an official Fox O&O. So the network controls those stations, right? So the network's like, well, you have to air it. You don't have a choice. And then, which is more common, you have affiliates, which the station, the news station, it's owned by an independent company like a Nextdoor or Sinclair, but it has agreement with one of the networks that they have a partnership. You know, they air the ABC, NBC, CBS Evening News, for instance. And so they have the ability, if they choose, not to. They have the ability, if they choose, to air or not air programs. And that's what they did in this case. Because Nextdoor and Sinclair were pissed about what Jimmy Kimmel said. So Nextdoor came out and it said, we're going to preempt Jimmy Kimmel. Meaning we're not airing it. It said Nextdoor Media Group announced that the company's owned and operated partner television stations affiliated with ABC Television Network will preempt Jimmy Kimmel Live for the foreseeable future, beginning with tonight's show. Nextdoor strongly objects to recent comments made by Mr. Kimmel concerning the killing of Charlie Kirk and will replace the show with other programming in its ABC affiliated markets. That's huge. Okay, there's a big chunk of the country that wasn't going to see Jimmy Kimmel. How about we go to Sinclair? Sinclair is the owner of Como News in Seattle. And Sinclair said it's not enough just to suspend him. This is after the decision, because Nextdoor is the big one, right? They have so many stations that after that happened, it was shortly after that that Disney ABC said, all right, we're suspending him indefinitely. Sinclair comes out after that and says, not enough, not good enough. Calling for FCC and ABC to take additional action, Sinclair's ABC stations to air a special in remembrance of Charlie Kirk during Jimmy Kimmel's live time slot on Friday. They said, Sinclair, the nation's largest ABC affiliate group, objects to recent comments made by Mr. Kimmel concerning the assassination of Charlie Kirk. As discussed with ABC earlier today, Sinclair decided to indefinitely preempt Jimmy Kimmel Live beginning tonight. Following these discussions, ABC has suspended production of Jimmy Kimmel Live. They called his remarks inappropriate and deeply sensitive. And they want an apology and they want further action from ABC and from the FCC, which makes me believe that they want off the air. They don't want him to return. And might I also add, and this is a report, and I'm going to skip ahead a little bit. Money is still important at the end of the day. And I would like to think that all these stations and everybody makes these decisions based off of what's right, right? But ratings matter. And I'm sorry, if Jimmy Kimmel's ratings were through the roof, would they have made this decision? I don't know. I think it's less likely. But the truth is that his ratings suck. And the ratings are what you use to sell ad spots. And advertisers buy ad spots where they're going to reach the biggest possible audience. And so it's not as if they're suspending their cash cow. Sure, he brings, you know, money in still. But there are certainly other audiences that advertisers would have a bigger reach on. So I think that makes the decision here a little easier. Now, President Donald Trump, for his part, he's excited. He's very excited about this. You know, they were all over. Oh, and I even, somebody shared a thing of Jimmy Kimmel back when Trump's Twitter account was suspended, celebrating that. And now everybody's like, free speech over Jimmy Kimmel. So President Donald Trump said, great news for America. The ratings challenged Jimmy Kimmel show is canceled. Congratulations to ABC for finally having the courage to do what had to be done. Kimmel has zero talent and worse ratings than even Colbert. If that's possible, that leaves Jimmy, the other Jimmy, and Seth, two total losers on fake news NBC. Their ratings are also horrible. Do it, NBC. President Donald Trump. I'm sad he didn't say thank you for your attention to this matter. So he was on what show was he on when he talked about Kimmel this morning?
No, this is with the prime minister this morning.
So he had his trip to the UK. He was sitting there with the prime minister and he was asked about Jimmy Kimmel being fired and the allegations that it's a threat to free speech.
Well, Jimmy Kimmel was fired because he had bad ratings more than anything else. And he said a horrible thing about a great gentleman known as Charlie Kirk. And Jimmy Kimmel is not a talented person. He had very bad ratings, and they should have fired him a long time ago. So, you know, you can call that free speech or not. He was fired for lack of talent.
He's a cold man. He's a cold guy. And look, I am willing to be wrong on this. If it's proven that the FCC put undue leverage on ABC News via Donald Trump to suspend Jimmy Kimmel, my opinion on it might change. But I know how the TV world operates. When you look at ratings, when you look at advertisers, and it's even possible that advertisers for these Nexstar and Sinclair stations were pressuring them to put out some sort of statement. All of this happens behind the scenes and leads to these decisions. But again, Jimmy Kimmel doesn't have a show if people aren't watching it and if it's not airing. And when you have two of the largest ABC-affiliated owners in the country saying, we're not airing it. In fact, we're going to air something about Charlie Kirk and his time slot. That's a problem for ABC News because there's no money in that. So unless proven otherwise, the most obvious reason why Jimmy Kimmel was suspended is probably the correct reason, is probably the real reason. Now, I would like to hope it's ABC saying, you know what, Jimmy, what you said about Charlie Kirk wasn't funny. It wasn't a joke. And it was factually inaccurate. At a time when we're trying to lower the political climate, you got to go. Do I think that that's their reason? No, I think their hand was forced, but not by the president of the United States. All right, coming up next, as promised, we're going to have an update on this racist assistant principal in the Tacoma School District who said America has a white male problem. First, with everything happening with the global economy, trade deals still in flux, AI, big conversation that Trump was just having in the UK around the future of AI, and of course, these new digital coins that are popping out seemingly every day. Are you concerned about how much risk your retirement portfolio is exposed to? Is it time to just get back to basics? Well, if you think it might be, join Bulwark Capital's Zach Abraham for his Back to Basics live webinar, October 2nd, 3:30 p.m. Pacific Time. The webinar is a frank discussion on the basic fundamentals of value investing, a perspective on the outlook for the remainder of 2025, plus a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. So hear directly from Zach as he shares insights in this free Back to Basics webinar, October 2nd, 3:30 p.m. Pacific. Register now. Know Your Risk Podcast. That's knowyourriskpodcast.com. Okay, I said on the show yesterday, we covered this crazy story. Crazy. About this assistant principal at Lincoln High School in Tacoma named Logic Amon. And he posted amid the Charlie Kirk thing, America has a white male problem. America has a white male problem. And then he commented because somebody said, don't let moms, wives, and the majority of teachers off the hook. And he said, well, indeed, white women either don't have the power and or interest to change the problem they are birthing. And that's enough to fire him in and of itself. Because what do you say to a parent of a white child in your district who this assistant principal thinks that they are a problem inherently because of their skin pigmentation? And the example I always give, you always look at the other side of it, other side of the coin. If it were a white teacher that said America has a black male problem, they'd be fired instantly. What else would happen instantly? It would be all over the news. So on the show yesterday, we played this because there's also this angle of this Logic Amon is a rapper on the side. And in 2018, he put out this disgusting rap song as an assistant principal where he is talking about committing a mass shooting at a school ahead of Christmas so he can instead celebrate Kwanzaa. And it's very graphic and very disturbing. I don't have to play it again. So this teacher has already shown he's unfit, this educator. But what did I say yesterday about his post about America has a white male problem? I said, I guarantee none of the five major outlets in Seattle cover it. They're not going to touch it because he's black. Can't criticize what a black man says. I mean, his rap that he released in 2018, the news media covered it at the time because parents were livid. He's talking about committing a massacre at a school at a time where at the exact time they were talking about banning semi-automatic assault weapons because of school shootings. And at the time, the media all covered it. But they couched it in, it was a question. Is it okay for an educator to rap about school shootings? And it was this flowery coverage because he's black. That's the only reason. So I thought, let's give him 24 hours. Let's see what the news media does with this story because it was everywhere. I mean, it was on libs of TikTok. It's all over the place. So right before we came on, I double checked. Not one of the major five outlets in Seattle has covered this. King, Como, Fox, Cairo, the Seattle Times, nothing. Do you think for one second that that would be the case if it was America has a black male problem from a white assistant principal? Of course not. And this is why. It's the media is doing all of this to our country. The media is doing all of this in our state. The media is 99.9% responsible for the division, the racial division, for the political rhetoric, for political violence, 99.9% responsible. And I tagged all of those outlets on social media this morning and I said, please ask yourselves honestly how you would cover this story if it were the other way around when it comes to skin tone. And they know the answer to that question. They know they're wrong, but they won't do it. Because you can't criticize what a black man says when he's talking about race, and he can say whatever he wants about white men. Even if he is supposed to be in charge of young white boys who come to his school. Genuinely, genuinely disgusting. All right, we have an exclusive on Undivided that we've been kind of working on making happen for a couple years now. So a little bit of background here. You will, of course, if you're from around here, know about the Manny Ellis case. So Manny Ellis, young black man living in Tacoma, and right before the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis in 2020, there was Manny Ellis. It didn't get a lot of attention until after George Floyd's death became this big deal. But Manny Ellis was essentially, he was high on meth. And there was a lot of kind of similarities that the media kind of drew between this and the George Floyd case. But he died in the custody of the Tacoma Police Department. And that happened again, like, I want to say a month before George Floyd, but nothing, there was really nothing put out about it. It wasn't this big controversy. And then George Floyd happened. And, you know, the Derek Chauvin, you know, there's the political uprising that happened across the country, and Derek Chauvin was ultimately arrested and charged with murder. And as soon as this uprising started happening over George Floyd, all of a sudden local BLM activists went back and brought up Manny Ellis's death. And now you have all of these things coalescing. And the mayor of Tacoma came out at the time, black woman, Victoria Woodards. And she came out and said, these officers who were involved in Manny Ellis's death should be prosecuted, arrested, prosecuted, and fired. So it was only a matter of time before that's exactly what happened. So there were three officers in the case of Manny Ellis that faced criminal charges. Tacoma police officers Matthew Collins and Christopher Burbank, they were the first on scene that day that dealt with Manny Ellis, and they got charged with second-degree murder and first-degree manslaughter. And then there was a third officer who was charged, Timothy Rankin. He was part of the backup that arrived to assist those officers because they were having such a hard time getting Manny Ellis under control. So Timothy Rankin gets charged with first-degree manslaughter. I think it's worth noting that he had a partner with him who arrived that day who was black, who was never charged. And I always thought that's because they don't want a black man's mugshot up on TV when they're trying to say that this is about race. And this was what elected leaders in our state made it about. Oh, here's these officers, two white officers, one Asian officer. And they killed Manny Ellis just like George Floyd was murdered in Minneapolis. And they did it was because he was black. And they argued that, and the medical examiner had ruled that Manny Ellis died from oxygen deprivation, although the defense attorneys for these officers said he was high out of his mind on meth and he had a pre-existing heart irregularity that they argued contributed to his death. So as you know, these officers go to trial. They were tried together and they were acquitted by a jury of their peers. This is after they had been cleared in multiple internal investigations. And then we're in this moment of race and social justice awakening. And the attorney general at the time, Bob Ferguson, now our governor, he decided, because Governor Jay Inslee gave him the permission, he was going to have a special investigation. And it was the attorney general's office under Bob Ferguson that arrested, prosecuted, and tried those police officers for the death of Manny Ellis. And he did it because it was political. I said that all along. They were cleared so many times. And they used the last option they had, Bob Ferguson trying to make a name for himself before he runs for governor, charging two police officers with murder, a third one with manslaughter, brings it to trial, highly publicized. A diverse jury, black, white, Asian. in one of the most progressive places in the country, and they acquitted all three of these officers. So that happens. And then it's during President Biden's term. And President Biden's DOJ decides, well, now, because we got to help them save face in Washington state, our Democratic friends, we're going to launch a civil rights investigation. And that civil rights investigation had been hanging over the head of these acquitted officers until President Donald Trump came into office. And a couple weeks ago, as you know, President Donald Trump's Department of Justice said, we are closing the civil rights investigation into these three former Tacoma police officers. And so that is what has finally allowed one of them to come forward and decide that he wants to tell his story. So we've been in touch for the last couple years with Timothy Rankin. He has never spoken to the media about the night that Manny Ellis died, about what ensued, about the political prosecution that he endured. So on Sundays with Subscribers this week, we have a 90-minute interview with Timothy Rankin, where he goes over all of it, emotional, in great detail. I want to play just a couple clips of it for you today.
I remember, so the day that we got charged, I mean, it was the, you want to talk about timing things, it's the same week as George Floyd anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, me, Shane, and Matt were all combat vets that did the same job, got deployed numerous times. So, you know, yes, any combat vet that has been deployed multiple times, Memorial Day weekend was that weekend. And I was like, for most veterans, Memorial Day is, you know, tough weekend for us. Because, you know, you remember a lot of the people that died overseas or your friends. So I was actually on my way to a tattoo appointment, of all things. I was on my way there, and I was on the highway, and, you know, my wife now, but back then, you know, we were just friends. She calls me and says, hey, you need to look at this. And I was like, what? Okay. And so I look at it, and it's, I think, a news article. And I was like, oh, okay. And so I end up pulling off of the side of the road on the highway and reading it. And so I found out we were being charged the same time everyone else was.
Unthinkable.
Yeah. And I remember getting off the phone with her, reading the article, instantly taking the next exit, start heading home, get on the phone with my lawyer, and my lawyer's like freaking out. He simply tells me, he's like, I'm on the phone with State Patrol right now. And he's like, there's been a warrant issued out for you guys' arrest, right? But so we found out at like, I think, 12:30 in the afternoon that we were charged, but the warrant had been in the system since 9 a.m. So right when the courts opened, they issued out a warrant and they didn't tell us about it.
Wow.
And so,
because I imagine you would have been happy to come in if
yeah.
this was
oh,
the
oh,
case.
Yeah.
Like let's
I
just
mean,
do this.
Yeah, I'm a cop. I respect the law. I understand the law. Like, I would not have, if you asked me to turn myself in, I would turn myself in willingly. But, you know, the lawyer at the time, he said, hey, just like, he's like, I'm trying to help you guys out. He's like, but State Patrol has an arrest team waiting for you guys. And I was like, okay, so it's basically they set us up to make it like a big ordeal, because they want to see us, this is how I picture it in my head, they want to see us get escorted out of our house in handcuffs in front of the media, because why? It looks good for the state. Look,
and for
look
somebody
at
who wants to be
yeah.
governor.
It's like, look at this cops, we got the cops, you know? But he was able to talk to whoever in State Patrol, and we ended up just arranging a meeting at his office in Pierce County, which is like right across from Pierce County Jail. That's where we're supposed to turn mm-hmm. ourselves over. There I was, wow. turned around, put my hands behind my back, and put handcuffs on, and then, you know, got escorted out to his patrol car, and then drove over to Pierce County Jail, and then went through the whole booking process, just like any criminal that I've ever arrested, go through a whole booking process. And then I was the last one in like to turn myself over to Pierce County. But you know, Matt and Shane were already there, and we were kind of like in the cells right beside each other.
You saw them?
Yeah. We didn't get a chance to see each other, but I knew they were there. I could hear them. I could hear one of the other officers. I'm not gonna say who, but you know, he was pretty emotional. You could hear him crying. So it's like you're sitting there in jail, and you're like, what did I do to end up here? And then you hear like a fellow officer you look up to just crying in jail, and you're like, it's like it's almost like this like sixth sense of like torture. Like I think the one question I kept asking myself is, what have I done in my life to end up here? So you know, you think back on it and you're like, man, what did I do to end up here? And then you're just like, the number one answer is, I don't know. I didn't do it. I feel like I've done a pretty good job living my life and trying to be a good human being.
Yeah. Gosh, it's a heavy interview. Again, we're airing it on Sundays with subscribers. I do have to play this clip, though, because I think it's central to really what I have been saying about this case and to what Timothy Rankin has been waiting to say about this case and to the person who brought it against him, now governor, former attorney general, Bob Ferguson.
What would your message be to now governor Bob Ferguson?
Man, I've thought about this for a long, long period of time.
And he will watch this.
Yeah.
So I want you to really think about what you want to say to him.
I mean, I feel like I don't know what you can say. Like the level of evilness that they undertook to charge us and put us through this whole entire thing. I was like, you can't put words to it, you know? Like, so to this day, like the AG Nick Brown still calls it a murder. Like newspapers still call it a murder. And it's like, how much more do we have to prove our innocence that we did not murder that guy that night? It's just bad things happen. But yeah, to Bob Ferguson, to Patty Eakes, to Nick Brown, to all the people that came after us, I mean, I don't really have any words to say, but you know, this life is bigger than us. You're gonna face not my judgment, but a higher power's judgment. You're gonna face God's judgment at some point in time in life. And I hope you have a good reason to explain why you did what you did, because for me, I've made peace with it, that ultimately, like, I mean, I have nothing to say. I've made peace with it, that it's out of my hands now. It's God will judge you, not me.
That part of our exclusive interview with former Tacoma police officer Timothy Rankin, who was acquitted in the death of Manny Ellis, and whose life was turned upside down and who still, to many, is guilty in the court of public opinion. That interview is going to air in its entirety, exclusive to Undivided subscribers, this Sunday. So if you'd like to become a subscriber, sign up undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. It is an emotional interview. It's very detailed and really the first look of its kind, I think, at what it is like as a police officer and what it was like in that political environment to be worried about what might happen to you for doing your job. And it's emotional all the way around. And he has, you know, kind words for Manny Ellis's family. He has sadness for the fact that they've lost someone that they care about. So don't miss it. And we will have a lot of teaser clips going out as well. All right, coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable, switching gears quite a bit. Starbucks barista, I told you, most entitled workers in America. Exhibit 9,454 coming up next. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones. Sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. Wes is the man. Wes has been doing this for a long time in our area. You know, a lot of real estate agents come and go. Not Wes. He has been a constant in our area. He knows the market like the back of his hand, and he can help navigate you through really any season when it comes to home selling. And by season, I mean the ups and downs that are natural with the housing market. And right now is an interesting time. You know, there's a lot of home homes on the market, but they're sitting for longer than normal. And so Wes is aware of that. He has a plan, innovative marketing strategy to make sure that your listing stands out, because that's what you need right now. There's also a lot of strategy that goes into what price you list the home at to make sure that you get people in the door and offers on the table. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com simply is a better way to sell your home. With that, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. I always preface this type of stuff with don't spit in my coffee. I love my local Starbucks baristas. There are many Starbucks baristas who are not entitled whiny little wannabe Antifa goons and who are there serving coffee with a smile, a positive attitude, and a good work ethic, okay? That's not these ones. So there's like the Starbucks union, and the baristas who are involved in the Starbucks union have just lost their minds. And I played this clip on the show a few months ago where they walked off the job and closed down Starbucks stores over the new Starbucks dress code that required them to wear black.
I believe that we will win.
Okay. So they're very angry, which I'm thinking, don't you guys like the color black? What's so bad about just black? And they're like, we have to buy all new clothes and this isn't fair. And they just want control over us. Yeah, it's a job. So there's a new wrinkle. Now they're suing the company to stop the dress code. This from the Associated Press. Starbucks workers in three states took legal action against the coffee giant Wednesday, saying it violated the law when it changed its dress code, but refused to reimburse employees who had to buy new clothes. The employees, who are backed by the union organizing Starbucks workers, filed class action lawsuits in state court in Illinois and Colorado. Workers also filed complaints with California's Labor and Workforce Development Agency. If the agency decides not to seek penalties against Starbucks, the workers intend to file a class action lawsuit in California, according to the complaints. So a few details here, just to show you how dumb this really is. Employees must wear khaki, black, or blue denim bottoms without patterns or frayed hems or solid black dresses that are not more than 4 inches above the knee. The dress code also requires workers to wear black, gray, dark blue, brown, tan, or white shoes. Like, that's, what isn't included in that? Oh, it has to be made from waterproof material. Socks and hosiery must be subdued. The dress code prohibits employees from having face tattoos or more than one facial piercing. Tongue piercings and theatrical makeup are also prohibited. As part of this change, and to ensure our partners were prepared, partners received 2 shirts at no cost, the company said Wednesday. Okay. Brooke Allen, a full-time student who also works at Starbucks in Davis, California, said she was told by a manager in July that the Crocs she was wearing didn't meet the new standards and she would have to wear different shoes if she wanted to work the following day. Allen had to go to 3 stores to find a compliant pair that cost her $60.09. Allen has spent an additional $86 on clothing for work, including black shirts and jeans. She said, I think it's extremely tone deaf on the company's part to expect their employees to completely redesign their wardrobe without any compensation. A lot of us are already living to paycheck to paycheck. You're some of the highest paid baristas in the world. And all the colors, like literally, it's not like they're black, gray, dark blue, brown, or tan shoes, khaki black or blue denim. Like, what is so hard about this?
And, you know,
and it's a job.
You could shop at Walmart instead of, I don't know where you're shopping. And
right.
Any of those color pair of shoes does not have to cost you $60.
No, so. The pair of shoes I have on today
cost
less than $60.
I have Converse on, which are name brand, and they were only $50.
Yeah, so. Anyway, she said she misses the old dress code, which allowed her to express herself with colorful shirts and 3 facial piercings. It looks sad now that everyone is wearing black, she said. Yeah, that's a literal quote from her. Multiple plaintiffs, like Allen, said they requested reimbursement from Starbucks to conform to the dress code, but were denied. Gilbert Cruz, an employee in Aurora, Illinois, requested $10 for the cost of removing a nose piercing. Nicole, how much money do I give you for your clothing? You're on camera every day. How much money do you get for your clothing, hair, makeup?
That'd be a negative.
That'd be a zero.
That'd be a big zero.
She's sometimes compensated for her job.
Yeah, sometimes you give me your Sephora freebies that you don't
true.
Like.
And you know who's not complaining? Nicole. It's just, you know what it is? It's unbelievable. Yeah. All right, we will get to our Florida report and how some things around Charlie Kirk happening in Florida we want to touch on. First, I'm trying to save you guys money. because you spend $5 a month supporting the show, and I appreciate that. So I want to somehow help you break even. So I keep telling you, take the First Mark Challenge. You need insurance. You already have it. Are you paying too much? So many Undivided viewers and listeners are now members of the First Mark family, and they email us all the time. They're like, wow, why did I wait so long to do that? I have better insurance, and I'm saving thousands of dollars a year. It's a good question. How many times do I have to tell you this? FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. Schedule time to take the First Mark Challenge. They'll go over all your current insurance, help you kind of understand your insurance needs, make sure you're not paying for anything you don't need. They go out, they shop the market. And did I mention you never pay them for this? You never pay First Mark anything for their services, and they can help you save a bunch of money. No downside. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. So they're always going to have your best interest in mind. All right. So obviously in Washington State, we've been exposing a lot of educators and left-wing nut jobs who have been celebrating the murder of Charlie Kirk. But, you know, we do a segment looking at what's happening in Florida every week, Florida Report. And we do it because it's a much different state, right? It's much different politically. It's much different in the makeup. But they also have had cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs people related to Charlie Kirk in their comments. But Florida is, of course, handling it much differently.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
You look lovely today. Lovely.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Oh, you look pretty too.
Thanks. Okay, God, what does a girl have to do to get a compliment around here? It's really tough. Nicole never tells me I look pretty. Rude. She's like, yeah, that's true. You look pretty today, Nicole, as well. Anyway, on to the news. So we've had a lot of teachers and educators who have said horrible things about Charlie Kirk in Washington State. Some are facing punishments for it. Some we don't know. But that's not a surprise here. And, Florida's not immune from that, even though it's a red state. So that's been happening in Florida. But I really like what the head of your education department, public education department, put out, reminding teachers that, like, yes, the First Amendment is a thing. You know, you get to speak your mind, but there is a line when you're tasked with the education of children.
Yeah, so he put out basically a memo to all superintendents and of the whole state, kind of about upholding professional conduct and ethical responsibilities. And the part that I really liked was a paragraph in there that says, although educators have First Amendment rights, these rights do not extend without limit into their professional duties. An educator's personal views that are made public may undermine the trust of the students and the families that they serve. If an educator's conduct causes a student or his or her family to feel unwelcome or unwilling to participate in the learning environment, it may violate part of Florida law. And it goes on to say, Florida law allows the commissioner to find probable cause to discipline an educator who, upon investigation, has been found guilty of personal conduct that seriously reduces that person's effectiveness as an employee of the district or the school board. And then he goes on to say, I expect you to share this reminder with all school district employees. Together, we must uphold the highest standard of professionalism and keep Florida's classrooms places of safety and academic achievement for every student. Govern yourself accordingly.
Govern yourselves. And yes, this makes sense. And there's actually precedent in this regard. There's been a court case before about a teacher and their First Amendment rights and where is the line. And it is a workplace. You're a public employee. And the hard thing is, the First Amendment protects you from the government. So what happens when you work for the government and you say something that's out of line? But obviously, if you're creating a hostile environment for students, there is a line there, and we've had a ton of stories that I would argue, like, if you're celebrating a shooting that, by the way, happened at a school, how should students feel safe? It just makes no sense. The first day 1A argument doesn't fly with some of these things.
No, it really doesn't. And I like that he made sure to remind people, like, yeah, you have that freedom, but you still have a duty. And if you're going to put your opinions above your duties to these students, then maybe you shouldn't be an educator.
Yeah. So meanwhile, the New College of Florida put out a post saying, today we announced that we will commission a statue of Charlie Kirk to honor his legacy and incredible work after his tragic assassination. The statue, privately funded by community leaders, will stand on campus as a commitment by New College to defend and fight for free speech and civil discourse in American life. The location of the statue will be announced in the coming months. And I love the idea for the statue. It's basically Charlie Kirk at a at a table with empty chairs around him. And I hope it's sort of interactive where kids can kind of sit at the chairs and take pictures and stuff like that. But as many people on the internet were pointing out, hey, love this idea, but it's going to take seconds for it to be defaced.
Yeah. And, you know, we're not free from, you know, radicalism and leftism in that regard here in Florida, but we are also not free of consequence. So Ron DeSantis made a point to say, if a student defaces the statue, then the student will be sent packing. Go ahead, make my day.
I love it. You know he means it. Make my freaking day. I wish you would, right? And the one that you're putting together looks bronze in nature, so probably a little easier to clean than something that's like stone and very porous. So yeah, I'm sure there are people, and this has been happening. I saw this horrific video, and I cannot remember for the life of me where it was, on a college campus. Texas? I think it might have been in Texas. And that's another example. Like, just because it's in a red state doesn't mean there's not cuckoo crazy people, where they had just painted this mural for Charlie Kirk with this quote from him, and it was a picture of Charlie Kirk, and these students come in and just paint over it and deface it. And it's like, okay, if you don't like it, don't look at it. You know, what is the point of that? If you don't like it, don't look at it. And those students got expelled, and rightfully so, because that's not free speech, that's a crime, right? So yeah, I like this, and I do trust that Ron DeSantis will make their day horrible if they do something.
He's waiting for that to happen. So yeah. If it does, we'll talk about it.
Yeah, we will. All right, Miranda. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Yeah, you know what? I think Ron DeSantis is hoping someone please do something to this statue so I can kick you out of school. Because that is not free speech, of course. All right, coming up next, we'll get to your comments. And I know I'm sorry about the subscriber poll, but we had to get the Sarah Perry story on. I'm the worst host ever. But I still hope you'll join me at the Engage Conference at the Main Power Center in Bellevue, October 22nd and 23rd. I'll be there talking about housing policy. And we'll even get into homelessness a little bit with my friend Jonathan Cho. It's a fun conference, so sign up to attend if you haven't already. It'll be good to see you guys in person. You can sign up, rhawa.org. It's being put on by our friends at the Rental Housing Association, rhawa.org. While you're at rhawa.org, if you are a small to mid-sized landlord, consider becoming a member of RHA. They can help you navigate this complex world of housing policy in the state of Washington. And they're down in Olympia advocating for you and to put an end to some of the insane policies that have been pushed in recent years. RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. All right, let's get to some comments. On Trump labeling Antifa a terror group, Baron of Gray Matter says, Antifa is now being designated as a domestic terror organization. Do they have the First Amendment right to protest? Assembly, neighborhood watch, report them? I don't know. I think yes, because they're not a foreign terror group. So I don't think you can stop them from assembling. I don't know. That's a good question. I'm not sure what changes if you're a terrorist. Yeah. Bolt up. Brandy, thank you for bringing this to the attention of the president. Yes, you're welcome. You know, I saw a quote from him. My favorite political show is Undivided with Brandy Cruz. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Jay Erickson, is dumbass Bob and puppet boy Bruce going to acknowledge that Antifa are terrorists or continue to let them do the Dems dirty work? They won't even acknowledge that Antifa is real. So yeah, the latter.
Well, Antifa doesn't really call itself.
Yes, they do.
Well, they don't apply for permits as Antifa.
Right, correct.
So that's why I don't think they, you know, say we're going to gather here as Antifa. Can you give us a permit? So,
yeah. And it is tough because it's like, what do you do? But they're able to form, you know, other people are considered terrorists and they're not card carrying members. So. Right. Sarah Perry's post about ICE, Ricky, she is directly putting the agents in harm's way, and it's got to be a federal offense. And again, I feel bad because I shared the post with the address that wasn't redacted, and I made it like I should have redacted it. So, God, am I now guilty of a federal offense? I hope not. Well, I hope not.
I think as soon as that went out, I would think that they took precautions and probably moved officers. So,
yeah, I mean, it was out with these activists anyway, but yes, that was a mistake, and I acknowledge that. I was just eager to break the news and I didn't think about it. Which side of the aisle is instigating violence again? Which side of the aisle is instigating violence again? It's sickening and disgusting. She doesn't consider ICE agents as human beings. Unfortunately, I can't say I disagree. Denise on Jimmy Kimmel. With Jimmy Kimmel and Stephen Colbert gone, where will the left get their news? Moon Goddess, Brandy instead of Jimmy Kimmel. Undivided After Dark. I am funnier than Jimmy Kimmel.
I'll give you that. He has not been funny for a while.
Thank you.
I knew his TDS was going to take him out. I wasn't sure when. But
yeah,
it's not surprising to me that it's this issue.
I agree.
Yeah, he hasn't been funny for a while, and his TDS has been out of control.
You let your anger overtake what's funny, and SNL is getting back to funny again, and it's because they've let go of the TDS a little bit. Weisscastle, Jimmy Kimmel made a legally libelous statement. Anyone doing that should be called to task. Yeah, I don't think it's handled by the FCC, but if the president wants to sue, or I don't know how the president would sue because it was about Charlie Kirk. So you can sue for libel. Brian E. Oh, naturally, it's always Orange Man bad. How about private corporation doesn't want to bankroll crap that their viewers aren't watching? These companies are beholden to customers and what they want, not Jimmy Kimmel and what he wants. Yep. On former Tacoma police officer Timothy Rankin speaking out, Oceana 23, think of all the good people caught up in social justice politics. Yeah. Graham, just remember, leftists want to release criminals and jail cops, and they worship death in the face of those who protect life. Let's see. Starbucks workers suing over the dress code, not the Batman. Wait, they're protesting wearing black while wearing black. Uh-huh. Literally. Literally in the video. Mm-hmm. Just wear that. Just wear that. You'll be fine. A couple other super chats. Our friend Renee Nassett, too awesome not to share, sitting in traffic, and I thought there was something wrong with my phone because it was echoing. Nope. The nice man next to me was listening to your show, too. Oh, my gosh. I love that. Oh, that's great. We're taking over. Common sense is spreading. Milkman, you don't hate the media enough. Yeah, hate's a strong word, but they definitely are the enemy of the American people sometimes. It's
sad. The Jimmy Kimmel thing, I mean, he has all the resources and all of the connections to check his opinion and to get the right information out to the masses.
And days had gone by.
And he chose to let hate just consume him and eat at the issue. It's just crazy what he allowed it to do.
It's bad. All right, I am traveling, so I'm going to try to wrap up the show. We'll get to our closing sanity check next. First, our first full week with our new sponsor, Valentine Roofing. So if you guys need, you know, maybe you have a leak, you need a roof repair, you need a new roof. They also do, they do siding, gutters, attic insulation, exterior cleaning. Support our sponsors who support us. Support businesses who support us. And Valentine Roofing is just the latest one. We're looking forward to a long and fruitful partnership. So if you know your roof is on its last legs, don't wait until the heavy rain hits. Valentine will give you a free roof estimate. So don't risk it. They can come and do an assessment of your roof. And here's the best part. If your roof can be repaired, they're not going to push you to get a new roof right now. They'll just repair it. And if you do need a new roof, if it's leaking now, Valentine offers a free leak stop so they can put you at ease. They'll make sure the leaks are fixed so no further damage happens, and then they'll replace your roof. So this is why you see hundreds of 5-star reviews on Google, Angie, Facebook, fair, honest pricing, low pressure estimators, excellent service. They even offer, and this is big, zero down financing for most projects. So you can get the work done now and pay over time, because we know that every homeowner knows having to replace your roof is a big expense. So zero down is a big deal. So Valentine Roofing, get a free estimate, call 206 Roofing, and tell them you heard about them on Undivided. We sure would appreciate it. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. What a show today. What a great show. I was telling Nicole, Dory used to say at the end of his shows, what a day, what a show, what a show, what a day. And I always remember that. It's days like this. And I always know why he rattled that off, because it's always a... And then I think at the end of the week, what a week... I don't remember. Something like that. Anyway, I like this one. So students, of course, are finding all sorts of reasons to walk out of class. In Seattle Public Schools, they walked out of class this week to protest their new lunch schedule. Okay. Well, down in Thurston, in Springfield, Oregon, at Thurston High School, kids walked out of class to protest their teacher, who in response to Charlie Kirk's assassination said it was a good thing.
Obviously, at Thurston, we have a history of shootings happening at our school, and murders had happened on that day. So we just don't want to stand for the murder that was occurred on that day.
If you're going to be okay with murders, I mean, what else are you really okay with, you know?
Wow. Weird how a high schooler gets that. If you're going to be okay with murders, what else are you really okay with, you know? Yeah, I do know. I wish more teachers did. All right, that has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's early edition of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. And don't forget, on Sundays with Subscribers, we have that extended interview, the first one he's ever done, with former Tacoma police officer Timothy Rankin. who was acquitted by a jury of his peers along with two other officers in the death of Fannie Ellis. You are not going to want to miss it. It is truly eye-opening. And if you already think our elected leaders hate cops, just wait to hear what these cops went through. All right. So subscribers, we'll see you Sunday. The rest of you, we will see you Monday back here on the live show, regular time at noon Pacific.